It's a ill mind that's still time build and refine. Still getting mine in the nine. Build and refine. Build and refine. Still getting mine in the nine. Build and refine. Still getting mine. Geometric. Don't touch the dial, you heard.
What's up? DJ Geometrics here. It's 9 p.m. Monday night. Once again, this is the 9 at 9 DJ podcast, the only show with 9 DJs on a roundtable panel discussing today's DJ topics. This show is brought to you by Beat Refinery DJ School app, Bach to Rock. Learn how to mix, scratch, and make music by visiting beatrefinery.com. We have school locations all across the nation. It's time for episode number 15. The pandemic is still going on, unfortunately. I think we've been dealing with this for 30-plus weeks now. Some states have reopened bars and nightclubs, but there's still major cities around the U.S. and all over the world that are still temporarily closed. So we have invited DJs to the show who actually own and manage their own venues. So we'll talk to them about what it's like dealing with their venues being closed during the quarantine and what they have in store for the future. But first, let me introduce the rest of my crew, my co-host. We got DJ As One.
You get me again, guys. What's up? Like, what's up, guys?
Go away.
Wait, did you press the wrong button?
I did. You can't write this stuff, man. You can't write this stuff.
Next up, we have Sean J.
Go get it.
Yo, that's how you do that.
Go.
And finally, we have Stylist Chris.
Yo.
Hey, man.
What's up? We are really happy to have some really amazing guests on the show tonight. Some people that I personally have the ultimate respect for, guys that have made their way not only as DJs but also as venue owner operators, and we're just really thankful to have them here with us tonight, kind of discussing what they've been through, giving us some insights, and you know, especially for all of our students that are watching and listening back, you know, these are guys that have figured out how to make a true career out of their passion and also to do legitimate business with that and not just, you know, something that's short-sighted or I'm going to do this for a little bit. These are career musician, career owner, operator, entrepreneurial type of individuals, and they don't come around too easily and not too often. So with no further ado, we're going to run them down as we always do, alphabetical order. This first gentleman is 10, 15 years the owner-operator, DJ even longer. He's the managing partner of legendary Bruno's Nightclub in San Francisco. If you talk to any DJs around that know of this place, they will tell you how much they love this club, particularly because they have an owner that actually understands the music and is a DJ himself. Let's give it up. Chris Wynn, a.k.a.
Klaxarb.
Welcome, brother. Thank you so much, man. We really appreciate you being here. Next up, he has come to D.C. a bunch of times and hung out with us, and that was via his company, The Music Trust. Solid DJs all across the globe, and they reside in multiple cities, and they are some of the best tastemakers I've personally seen DJ. Shout out to The Music Trust. This gentleman also in Portland owns Tube, Fortune, Revelry, Maxwell, and Century. These are iconic places in the PDX where a lot of the DJs that we all know and love have to make a stop at, and he's a friend of the show. He's back on again. Let's give it up for Eric, aka Evil One.
Welcome back, brother.
Yo, hey, yo, yo.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
All right.
Friend of the show.
Thanks
for cutting your hair for us too.
Friend request.
Appreciate it.
Yes, man. Appreciate you, man. Thank you for
thanks for having me.
All the stuff you guys are dealing with on the West Coast, man. You and Chris with that, just a myriad of just what the F's, and you guys taking time out really means a lot to us. And speaking of a lot, this is a personal friend of mine that I've known since I was barely old enough to even understand what DJing was. I think I first saw this guy DJ at a place called Exodus back in the day in DC. I think another spot was maybe Down Under. And so this is a guy that's been in the industry as a DJ, and in 1995 opened up the legendary 18th Street Lounge as pretty much the premier venue in DC for several decades at this point. And a couple of the other iconic venues that were owned and operated by this guy, Red Dragonfly. He was one of the original owners of Marvin, one of the original owners and U Street Music Hall, MXDC. He's just been doing so many different things. And we're just really thankful to have him. He also owns Rhythm and Culture Records. Let's give it up for our brother, Fareed Nouri.
Fareed, thank you for being here.
Welcome to the show.
Good morning, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for being here with us, man. Appreciate it. And then this guy has been a personal favorite DJ of mine for at least 10 years, somebody that I always love the not only the remixes and blends that he shares with me or some of the sets, the venue. He's been DJing for 25 years, owns and operates a neighborhood bar in Pittsburgh called the Goldmark with his wife, Nicole. And he still plays out a lot, and which is great. And
I also have one of the best do-over sets.
Oh, indeed. Indeed.
And put that on the resume.
Boom. And he just, I think just this year, finally made it official and started Plenty DJ Agency in Pittsburgh, which helps facilitate gigs to five of the best DJs in the area. Let's give it up for our homie, DJ Nugget.
Hey, yeah.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here, everybody.
Yeah, and big shout out to Doc Bless, who's sitting in right now, associate producer, hanging out with us. Let's just start running it down, man. Look, we've got so much going on and so much in different areas of this country with different rules and laws. Just a quick rapid fire. Anybody open? Chris, are you open in San Francisco now at all in any capacity?
I'm not. And I just kind of feel like if I can't open and be what we were or kind of even close to what we were, then it's just really not worth it, business-wise and also just time-wise, you know? I'd rather just be with my family and take care of them and not work, you know, 12 hours a day just to, you know, break even. Because, I mean, labor is expensive and, you know, there's a whole lot of costs associated with opening, and we don't really get to do anything. We can do drinks to go and we can do, you know, drinks outside, but we'd probably be able to serve 12 people at the most at one time. So I haven't been open. And I actually don't foresee being open anytime soon.
And that's real, man. And I think you know, in places where you can technically be open, but you realize and have the kind of vision to see that it's not worth it, and on all the levels you said, it takes a lot of, you know, foresight and really, you know, really tough spot to be in. Eric, Portland,
yo,
give us a rundown of is anything open, and then also kind of a quick overview of the laws and what you could and couldn't do if you wanted to.
Cool. So right now in Oregon, a lot of the state's in phase two, but the Portland area is in phase one. So we have a maximum group of 10 is like the biggest group you can have. 10 o'clock curfew. So, you know, as a place that after 10 people packed in dancing, that really changes what we can do. Luckily for us, one of our places, Century, has a really nice patio. So we opened a couple months ago and have been able to be open outside only. You come in and order, there's plexiglass in front of the bar. So you get your drink, you get a number for your food, and then, you know, you hang out outside on the patio. We kind of expected that to be slow right away, but surprisingly it was busy. So we had to add security just to like enforce those rules of, you know, people will get a couple drinks in them and they want to, you know, grind on somebody or just break all the rules instantly. And so you need to have just basically a cop there, like, yeah, stay apart. So of our five places, we have one that's open and, you know, it's doing good, but that's like 10% of what a normal,
wow,
normal week would be. So it's just like not a long-term solution, and also fall and winter around the corner. And I don't know if any of you guys have been to Portland, but we're famous for our rain, and that is not a joke. So,
right.
How many people are going to want to come hang out in a tent while it's pouring down rain? So it's grim. But whenever I get down about it, I talk to my friends in the industry out here too, and we're all going through the same thing. Like, what do we do? And there's really no answers and no easy decisions, and we're just going through it.
And do you have, with so many venues, do you have like five different landlords at each place?
Four different landlords. Tube and Maxwell is the same landlord, and both of those places are like the tiny little sweat box places with one way in and out. And so there's really no way to open. Our capacity would be like six people if we followed the rules. So I told our landlord as much, and he was like, I expect full rent.
Wow.
From the whole time you've been closed and going forward. And we only have 2 years left on our leases there. So it's like, do I go, you know, 80 to 120 grand in debt on rent, knowing that I only have guaranteed of 2 more years to eke it out? So it's just like, wow, none of the decisions we face are easy ways forward. So, and he's probably one of our good landlords.
So you can't be evicted, right? Are you paying rent right now?
We're not paying rent right now because we're closed, okay, but the eviction moratorium ends September 30th, which is in what, 8 days? Yeah, so, you know, the hammer's going to come pretty quick. And I've been writing to the mayor, city councilors, county commissioners, state officials, congressmen, and just saying like, this problem is not over. And the solutions you guys have put in place were temporary band-aids. And, you know, the apocalypse for our industry is coming in 8 days, and nobody's doing anything.
Yeah, that's, and, you know, Fareed, you know, let's dive in and speak quickly, and we'll get back to it and deeper, but just kind of give the viewers and give our students just a bit of an update on what went down with ESL.
Well, you know, just to follow up on you guys earlier, it seems like there's less and less conversation about nightclubs and bars and even, you know, venues. With the stuff going on the Hill right now, you know, all this pack, the next stimulus package is not even being spoken about now. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out for whoever was waiting, you know, anxiously for this next bill to kind of keep them going for like PPP round two and all this. So I'm not sure. Yeah, you know, going back to what Chris just mentioned, just about the ESL's, you know, closure. I mean, you know, it seems like we're all in the same kind of position that, you know, Chris from San Francisco, and I forgot, from Oregon.
Eric, yeah.
You know, I was in a position where my lease just was expiring too in June. So it was kind of a position where, all right, am I going to extend, you know, another term for a 5-year term, you know, during the pandemic and based on pre-pandemic prices. So, it's, we had already started a negotiation process October of last year, but, you know, they took their time to go back and forth and I never got the paperwork. So, just looking at it in the next 4 or 5 years, you know, I don't think the first 2 years is going to be anything for this business, you know, for the next 2 years. We're not going to get any kind of a semblance to normalcy. Maybe few months after the vaccine is widely used, effective. So beginning of 2022, maybe that's what you might get some kind of activity. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but if you read the medical journals, which you know, it tells a little bit more than just what we hear about the vaccine on like regular media. It's a lot more, you know, complex than what comes across, right? We get a vaccine, everybody gets a vaccine, we're all good. It doesn't work like that. It's a long process, obviously, you know. So and landlords, no matter whether you open at maybe 10% or any capacity, they want full rent. And you know, they in my case, he didn't even understood the fact that I can't operate. It's illegal to operate. So, you know, we have a patio, but it's not even considered outdoors because it's walled on all four sides. We don't have a kitchen, but I don't think they want to hear because there is no umbrella law or like regulation, right? So every place, you know, every neighborhood or landlord has his or her own rule. So mayors intervene, but it's not even, it's like guidance, right? It's not rules. It's not laws. So, you know, they're encouraged to give you breaks, but they don't have to, right? So, you know, it's that kind of a language you keep hearing, which means all the burden is on us and the smaller business person. So, I had to make a decision based on the next 4 or 5 years. You know, it's like, okay, I can carry a bit of debt for the next 5 months or 6 months, right? But then we're talking about a couple of years. And, you know, rents in urban areas are pretty expensive. You know, they're exuberant expensive. So, I'm going to go ahead and borrow on future income with an uncertain future. So we don't even know if these vaccines are going to work, are going to be successful. What if I went ahead and had a 5-year lease ahead of me and there's no vaccine. You know, it's like, I'm going to be, you know, I'll have to pay the, you know, a landlord one way or the other, right? You know, they want a personal guarantee on the lease. So kind of a tough spot to be at, you know, I hear the concern and it's just, there's not much, there's not much more clarity on what the future is, right? Yeah. You know, restaurants, okay, they do outside delivery. I'm not saying it helps. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to help them to be profitable, but maybe they can stay afloat. Maybe. I don't know. But nightclubs, bars, and live music venues, it's going to be tough to pivot, right? I mean, what are we going to do? You know, we can't sell our streams, we can't sell enough t-shirts or hats or masks.
Yeah.
The places don't have the food, which seems like it's most of us. There's no income source besides the cover charge and drinks at the bar.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we're going to be realistic, you know, in a pandemic, nightclubs are the least essential and most dangerous place to have open. And I get that, you know, and I feel the same way that you do, Fareed. And, you know, I've kind of just resigned myself to just accepting that this is kind of the new normal for a while. And I don't think that, you know, I mean, I think I respect anybody, whatever their personal decision is or whatever they feel is best for them. But I kind of think, you know, as a business decision to go into debt or to spend all your cash on rent on something that's that may not ever happen, I just don't think it's, you know, it's wise. And not only that, but there's going to be so many vacancies
in
the next coming years that the price of commercial rent is going to go down anyway, you know, so you're kind of just paying for nothing.
Mm.
But it's a hard decision, like you said, and there are zero good options.
It is, you know, and my, you know, for me, the main concern was like, okay, you know, I've worked for this for all, you know, for the past 25 years, I've built value, right? Now it's worth zero, or it's worth what my liabilities are. So in order for the value for it to come up to where it was, I have to pay all this debt to keep it afloat until it comes back to where it was before, which we don't even know if it's going to happen. So we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars just to keep the location intact.
Yep. So
maybe once there's a full reopening, the value of the business can go back to where it was in the pre-pandemic. It's a very risky move, right?
Yeah.
So then also, like, one thing also that, you know, I noticed with, from my basic research, I don't have to be a scientist, but just, you know, basic, you know, the future, the post-pandemic is going to be a bit of a different environment too, especially, you know, for like urban areas or, you know, dense urban areas. So you're not going to have the full-on office traffic or the residential traffic. There's a lot of people who are moving out of the urban areas or, you know, work from home is going to be more prevalent. So the downtowns might start to hollow out a little bit. Now, you know, I had a 10,000 square foot space in a downtown area. I'm not sure how, you know, exciting or appealing that would be in a post-pandemic era where urban areas are a bit kind of, you know, hollowing out.
Yeah,
a bit of economic malaise. People are not doing well work-wise, income-wise, you know, and then there's no office traffic, there's no retail traffic. I'm not sure how that would look, right? So that had to do a lot with it too. So, I mean, but yeah, you know, I mean, I kind of like, I talked to Chris a few times about this, and I kind of made my peace with the fact that, okay, I realized there's not going to be a club scene or business, you know, during the pandemic. At the time, which was a few months ago, you know, between then and a vaccine and then after a vaccine also. So all these areas are really questionable and unknown for our industry, because, you know, what happens in our businesses is exactly what shouldn't happen in COVID. Is, you know, a lot of crowding, alcohol, and then you meet with a bunch of strangers, right? That's exactly things that
recipe for disaster.
Too. Exactly. So you have to
totally,
in order to hear each other, you need to be close to each other to talk.
That's why they most people are like, oh, you know what, you know what, you know, what's up with bars and restaurants, all these. I see people who go to the grocery stores. I'm like, well, when you go to the grocery store, you're not wasted and try to meet people, right?
Right. You're trying to avoid people.
Right.
Go to the get out.
I just had that argument with somebody the other day trying to argue Home Depot and Lowe's to what we do. And I'm like, no, it's not the same thing. You're not, you know, when you're going to buy a shovel, you're not like, you know, kissing it and like it's a beer, you know. Wear your mask and you leave.
Yeah. Giving random people your credit card back and forth, money exchanging. And nugget,
and then you get a high five, you know, and it just that's what happens. So, you know, but you know, I kind of resigned to the fact that, okay, this is, you know, my role or my, you know, business is going to stop at this point for now, because I'm, you know, and there's a lot of people in town who are really pushing for local help or federal help. I don't know. I mean, it sounds really ambitious, right? When all the budgets are getting cut and there's more, you know, there's, you know, school and daycare and all that stuff that, you know, comes ahead of our industry at least, right? I mean, I don't want to be the pessimist here, but you know, when you look at them, like a mayor's office, right? You know, they'll look at, okay, well, this industry is not going to bring us any kind of sales tax until a full reopening. So why, you know, keep it afloat? And then all this, the value, you know, budget to keep this business afloat while we can pay unemployment or daycares or schools. Yeah. So, you know, and we're not essential, but I mean, for our world and for our culture and for us, for our, you know, businesses, of course we're essential, but I think I kind of realized that, okay, I'm not that, you know, in the big sphere of things, I'm not as important as say, you know, schools or daycare or hospitals or
yeah,
we're like the new coal mining industry.
Yeah, a lot of realizations coming around, man.
Even
your DJing, our DJing skill. Like, there was a point in time where I was like, "Well, my skill's worthless," you know. At this point, like, I'm not anything near essential. But then on the other side, I had to come through the tunnel and look at it and say, "No, what I do, what we do, is still art." You know,
right. Absolutely.
And the world needs art. Absolutely. It's just at this moment, the balance is shifted and we need to focus. There's a magnifying glass saying, hey, world, there's some fucked up shit going on right now. Mm-hmm. And this magnifying glass is, you know, and this has magnified a lot of things that we, you know, we've talked about this, you know, that are clearly, you know, not quite working.
Yeah.
You know.
I want to piggyback off of something that you just said, Fareed. Actually, this really stuck out and hit me in the chest when you said it. You said the value of my space is currently only your liabilities. That's a crazy sentence to me because everyone here on this panel, you are an owner of a cultural hub in a city or in whatever region that you're in. Just the fact of the matter is when we look at the quantification of space and use of space, to have a 5,000 to 10,000 square foot property, what's going to occupy that? Either some bland office space, which those are probably out too, like large capacity office spaces.
Yeah. And
without culture coming to a city, nobody wants to stay there. You go there to work, you go there to get your paycheck, and then you go back home. And if you don't live in that city, there's no reason to stay further if that city doesn't have a culture, an identity of its own. So it's the idea that because on paper the value of a venue is only currently based on the debt that would be, floated in order to stay open and not completely permanently close doors is... Oh, that hurts. But I also wanted to throw that to Nugget too and see, I guess, as we're having this conversation about each different city, what's your experience been so far in Pittsburgh?
Horrible.
And you had two venues, is my understanding.
Yeah. So, well, I did. I lost one in June. Yeah. I didn't even write that into my, thank you.
I know, I wanted to say it, but I didn't know if
wrong
with it. But yeah, I mean,
I figured we'd touch on it. Yeah, it's funny because Eric and Chris, we had a podcast a few months ago, and like maybe a month into everything going on, and even then my wife and I already knew we had a club. We had a 300 person two story club that was open for about 3 years. And so we had 2 years left on our lease. It's called Scenario. And it was on the opposite side of town. It's where my little DJ bar is. And as soon as the pandemic hit, my wife and I kind of looked at each other like the future of this is just completely pointless for the time being. I mean, I just didn't see anything clearing up in the next, you know, even in April, we were just like, where is this going to go? But to be perfectly honest, we were really lucky. I had a good relationship with my landlord there, and I was able to reach out to him, and we went back and forth, and I'm not going to lie, I still lost a significant amount of money in the deal, but not as much as I would have lost if he would have kept me in that lease for two more years. So we lost that place. My other bar, which is like my baby, I don't have children, but the Goldmark, this bar, is like my baby. My wife and I own that together too. And we opened in June for 3 weeks We were only opening on the weekends, and it's, you know, it's a party bar, so it's just like everything that you guys have. And even that was such a huge challenge because it's really small. It's only a, you know, legally we hold 100 people. But whenever we were able to open back up in June for 3 weeks, we were at 50% capacity. So we we decided to even pull back from there because we wanted to try to keep 6 feet of distance between everybody. You know, we had all the rules we were from the CDC, we were trying to follow as smart as possible because we knew it was like our bar is basically like a landmine. It's exactly what we were just talking about. Like everybody comes in there and they don't even know how to not party. It's just a party place. You know, the right. DJs are rocking, people go in and they want to escape and have some drinks. And, so whenever we opened those 3 weeks, it was a challenge for the first weekend we were open. We were like, people came in, they were dancing, they were partying, and we were like, you know, just it didn't feel safe to us. So we like pulled back a little bit more on the capacity, and then within the third weekend, they shut us completely down again.
Wow.
But so we've been closed. Pittsburgh is open to there's a ton of rules up. Obviously, I'm sure all you guys know it's the same. And I've been looking in other markets too, just to see what everybody's doing. But right now they just changed the rules here as of yesterday. And there's a really crazy story going on in Pennsylvania. If you guys want to look into it, it's pretty wild right now. A bunch of counties, the hospitality groups sued the state,
right,
and they won. They won from a federal judge in downtown Pittsburgh last week, and the judge basically said that what our governor was doing was unconstitutional to the hospitality business. And Pittsburgh's a crazy city. It's very blue collar. It's very, you know, we're on the west side of the state. It's not Philadelphia, you know. It's the mid-Atlantic. It's, you know, it's very divided right now. You know, you have a very prominent Democratic side and you have a very prominent Republican side. And if you drive 30 minutes, you know, east of Pitt or, if you drive 30 minutes east of Pittsburgh, it's very, very red. So when they won, that federal judge made that call. We were basically allowed to open up again at 50% capacity, but my wife and I sat down and kind of put this whole thing together for very small private events whenever we were completely shut down that we could bring in, basically we could bring in groups of 12 people, and because they had us at the time at 25% capacity, for us that would be basically 12 people, which actually feels really good in our space. It's, you know, it's everybody has enough room to kind of have fun at that point. But there's a lot of rules that were in place that were, you had to have food. Everybody had to have food. You know, so we went back and forth and we basically found like a very small loophole that we kind of were able to work within where it still made sense and it kept our customers and our employees safe. And we've been doing that and it's actually been working out great for us. So we just booked our 26th party in a month.
Wow.
So, We have two or three every Friday and Saturday, a few on Sundays, a few on the weekdays, basically for the last like month. So it's been great. Our regulars have been great, but we're also having those conversations now where it's like, this isn't going to sustain through the winter. The winters here are terrible, you know? So we know it's going to fall off and then maybe we'll be able to do it in the spring. We're talking about right now, if we're going to open up any other nights or any afternoons and maybe try to do something different. But right now we're kind of like sticking to this private party plan because we think it's working best for us and for our customers. So that's kind of where we're at.
And it's interesting because, and we'll touch on it a little later, but you know, when nightclubs were first really established, especially in New York in the late 60s, early 70s, so much of it came out of turmoil and the city's eroding and kind of the same thing that's happening right now. And I think Chris, you were mentioning it earlier, Fareed, you were mentioning it, like the rent at some point, it's the law of economics. The square footage that they can charge today, they won't be able to charge in 4 months when they not only the buildings that they own that host some bars and clubs, are, they also own maybe the above portion that is a bunch of offices that aren't filled. And, you know, some of these club owners or, you know, they're not club owners, but the owners that own the real estate are going to, they're going to start getting hit. They're going to start, if this, the longer this goes on, some of them might lose some of their locations. They might start defaulting on mortgages, which is kind of part of the whole madness of this whole thing is how, you know, if you're not able to protect it from the top, you're, it's just going to get passed down and until it lands on the people that are at the street, you know. And we're certainly looking at a time where I feel like all you guys have invested a lot of time and energy into understanding a lot of the politics, even to the point where, like, I remember, you know, Eric, you were even thinking like, oh man, I think I'm going to run for office at some point. It's gotta be, you know, you guys are studying so much of the law at this point. Like, where do you see, you know, any of this to try to put a positive light on it? Like, what you've had to dive into and learn, like what kind of education are you going to take moving forward as a business owner, as an entrepreneur from that you've learned from this experience? Chris, start with you.
You know, I mean, I actually kind of prepared for this. I didn't prepare for a pandemic, but I've prepared for a rainy day, you know, because having a nightclub that's really busy, and just in my experiences in the past, you could be shut down for any number of reason. And, you know, it could be anything. It could be fights. It could be, you know, underage drinking. It could be, lots of things. I've just been saving money you know, if it comes to the point where things get better, and even if I have to, you know, close Bruno's, and I'll have enough to start again, do something else. And I think that just in the long term for anybody out there, like, as far as the advice I could give is just try to have a small nut and, like, just save your money and just prepare for the worst always, you know? I mean, I could have never expected all this, but
yeah,
I did prepare for a rainy day and here it is. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. I don't, based on, you know, what I've learned, like, with this whole experience, I think I've just learned to try to keep things in perspective. You know, like, things are really bad, but I think at least I know that I'm still pretty fortunate. You know, I have a roof over my head. I have my health and my family. And I look at history and I look at maybe somebody that was born in, like, I don't know, 1910, and which they were going through a world war. And then there was a pandemic in 1918. And then there was a huge stock market crash and a depression. And then there was World War II and then the Korean War and, you know, civil unrest and Vietnam. And just to go through all those things throughout a whole lifetime would be so crazy. But this, just in my lifetime, is the first thing that's ever felt anything, you know, like that. Maybe 9/11, but, you know, this is something that's directly, the first thing that's actually directly affecting me. So, you know, I think that if I just tell myself to keep things in perspective, then really, like we're okay. This is not that bad.
Well said.
But, and to your point, a rainy day, but this is like Forrest Gump rain. This is like 35 days of sideways, upside down rain, like every direction rain. And
it's true.
And I don't know. And the thing is, when the rain stops in Forrest Gump, the bullets start flying. So, I mean, I don't know where we want to go with all this stuff.
Lieutenant Dan.
Oh, my goodness. Like, you know, I kind of start to wonder sometimes, like, where is it going to end? And we've seen it, you know, it continues. It doesn't start to feel like it's getting smoother. It just ratchets up every week.
You know, if you guys, I'm sure you paid attention, like there's a huge spike in New York right now, right? And we're going to get it pretty soon, unfortunately, but they haven't opened any of their clubs there for all this time. So
still?
Yeah.
Basically.
I mean, they're experimenting with these kind of like, you know, seated clubs in Holland, where you get a stool and you dance around the stool, holding on to the stool. So it's kind of
weird, but they're trying things.
That's what Chris does.
Yeah, it's like organized nightclub. <you know? laughs>
Whatever that was, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just not in people's, you know, like in the authorities or the government's, you know, foreground as far as what are we supposed to do with this industry. But it's upon us to kind of, you know, at least keep it going during the pandemic when there's no outlet. And, you know, Chris and I have mentioned before, we talked about this before, where I think a lot of good would come out of this for our world, where, you know, usually economic recessions or downturns are like a fertile ground for, like, you know, creativity in the arts and all this stuff. I mean, you know, like what we do as far as, you know, DJing and, you know, all this stuff came around from the recession in this 70s, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, the hip hop and all that culture, right? So I think we're gonna be pretty okay as far as industry down the road. It's just a matter of, you know, we have the ability to keep it going on social media and, you know, on Twitch. But I think coming out of it, it's going to be a bit more coming back to basics a little bit, you know, more, less, you know, transient urban areas, more localized. So it's like pretty like local scene, maybe smaller venues, right? A bit, you know, closer to neighborhoods because of the result of the pandemic, where like downtowns won't be as exciting as they used to be. So that's what I think, and learning from this experience was merely about when you make a decision of this magnitude, you have to be able to look at all the angles, right? As wide a perspective as possible. And well, that's my take on this one. I mean, it took me about a couple of weeks to make a decision, but I kind of took off the matrix for like a week and a half of that.
I can only imagine what that had to feel like.
Yeah. Just and he's got me in his ear going like, you can't close the street.
A lot of people.
Yeah, I was just talking to Chris, and that's about it. I was just in my own world, just doing my own, you know, just got, I had to take a look at the current time, the interim time, and the post-pandemic time, right? It can't just be like, okay, am I closing or opening? Because it's not as easy as that. So, yeah, I mean, I think on the other side, you know, as Chris mentioned, there's going to be a lot more opportunities to get it back into business if the coast is clear once and for all. As far as rents, more options of maybe, you know, exciting spaces in more cooperation by landlords and neighborhoods as far as noise and all those regulations, because, you know, cities would want the tax base to stay the same or increase. So I think it's going to be okay in the next few, you know, in the next few years, but we're going to see a bit of a downturn in our industry because we don't have an outlet. I mean, we can't operate. So, I mean, Ibiza is not opening any of the clubs until next June, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe May. There's a couple of things
that's tentative, I'm assuming. Right.
Yeah. So we don't even know what's going to happen then, right? So, you know, there's a lot of talk about trying to get some aid and government aid. I'm not sure how that's going to work out, though. Like, I'm not even sure if that's a priority for government officials or senators or congressmen, right? I mean, they have so much to deal with right now, from unemployment to schools to daycare to hospitals to essential workers and you name it, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, just kind of, you know, take our acts online for a little bit for now and then keep the culture going that way, at least.
Yeah, Eric, you know, you've been, you know, speaking of online, I mean, I follow you online, so I kind of feel like I get a little bit into your world, and we share a lot of the same, I think a lot of the same cultural background, and even though I'm East Coast and you're West Coast, we both have young kids and we're entrepreneurial guys and we love the music, and I've got to play with you a bunch of times, rocking sets, and like you're one of my favorite DJs to just like have fun with, like Impulse, you, I, we're all just having a good time. It's just like it's really a special thing. Nugget, I've played with you before. Like, I have one of my most memorable times ever DJing when I was at your spot at the Gold Mark, and how much fun we had rocking. And so I think in some ways you guys have already kind of set a precedent of, you know, making places fun and, you know, creating clubs that really cater to the DJ. And Chris, you know, I was supposed to be out in San Francisco for 18 days, and I was, every DJ that I was, big up Audio One, big up Aaron the Era, like they were like, we're going to Bruno's every night that you're off. Like, we're just, that's where we're going to hang out, and you're going to have the best time of your life, and you're going to hear the best music.
You might be better off.
Yeah. Aaron, shout out to Aaron, but he was like, you're not going to be able to walk for like 10 days, you know.
That sounds accurate.
But do you guys feel like, and you know, and 18th Street Lounge, if for all those that don't know, 18th Street Lounge is one of these places where, like, if somebody came up to you and asked for a song that you didn't want to play and they gave you a look, you could just tell security, like, this person, they don't belong here, get them out. And you have the full support of the owner being like, hey, if someone doesn't get it, get them out, we don't want them here.
Yep.
You know, and that's like, that doesn't happen. It's the opposite usually of where, like, hey, this guy just bought a bottle and I need you to play
Katy Perry's album.
Seven of the new Drake songs in a row, back to back, you know. And do you guys see, like, you guys, I think, are already on that, but do you see any, when you do finally get to reopen, do you see musically pushing what you were doing even further, and also do you see like the other venues around kind of reaching in and trying to be more meaningful with the music?
I'm going to be honest. I haven't even thought about that. That's a good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. I don't know. I think for us, for me personally, I mean, we were already kind of doing that, so I would just kind of stick to that. But I think that maybe DJs themselves will be that, because like they've been live streaming this whole time, and like they've been playing so much music that you don't really get to play in a nightclub setting. And I think that when they come back, they're gonna, some of that is just kind of spill over into the scene a little bit, and I hope so, because I would like to see more places that just kind of let the DJ, you know, do their thing and not really cater to the crowd as much.
Yeah,
but I think it's highly possible that maybe the DJ may not even be like a focus anymore, and it'll be like a lot of places where they're just like how it used to be, like in the 80s and 90s, where the DJ would just kind of be off to the side, just playing music, and people would just be like getting drinks and food and stuff.
I kind of like that style.
There's a beautiful picture there.
Hey, DJing in a loft or something.
Yeah.
What do you think, Eric?
I mean, if it goes back to the way it was, that would be disappointing. I mean, I feel like, I hope that DJs and venue owners are taking this time to grow and come up with new ideas and new things, because I mean, Drake put out an album during quarantine, and you saw people talk about it on social media for like 2 days, and that was fucking gone. And like, when we reopen, are people going to want to hear WAP? I mean, probably not.
I hope not. I really, really hope not.
Right? I mean, I haven't heard a Tyga song in 7 months, and it's fucking amazing. I'm not saying like you're going to play Griselda at primetime, but like, yes, it's going to be different. I mean, I feel like hopefully people that have been stuck at home for the last however long this goes on are going to be like,
that would be cool.
Oh, I want to be like shown what's good, not like I know what's good, because hopefully they're at home like, man, this is boring. I want to be like catered to in different ways.
I don't know if anybody else has noticed this, but in the course of the last couple of years, I've kind of been paying attention to social media and the people that I'm connected to, especially on Facebook. This is a thing, but people just have gotten to this place where no one wants to Google anything. And we're, as DJs, all coming from a culture where like doing your own homework is important. So I've always looked at that a little sideways. My hope is because people don't even want to Google their question. They want to type it in a status bar and wait for their friends to answer it. Hopefully what we do as DJs when we're in front of crowds again, whenever that may be, is going to be appreciated a little bit more because they've had the same 12 songs on a playlist, even though they have access to Apple Music or Spotify. People, I've shown they're not going to do the work and do the digging. If yeah, that's our specialty, I think that there might be a niche getting carved out to really go let loose and just kind of play the things that had no place before. That's really my pipe dream.
I mean, that kind of sounds like how Bruno's was before too. Like, big ups to Chris. I mean, you could play a Kenna song at midnight and people are dancing on the furniture. It's like,
ooh, yeah, that's next level shit.
Kind of that.
Yeah.
I mean,
more of that.
Well, Tube is like that too. I mean, one of the best, one of the most fun times I ever had DJing was at Tube in Portland. So, you know, and I think that, I think we're similar in that sense that we just, I think we trust our taste so well, for everything, not just music, but every experience possible. And, I think that when you trust yourself enough, and you trust the DJs, then it'll kind of work itself out. So.
And do you guys feel like the crowd, like the younger crowd, is worse or better than maybe like a crowd from like 5 or 6 years ago in terms of like the musical taste? I personally feel like I feel like I've seen more of the younger kids actually know a little bit more music than kids like even 6 or 7 years ago, like where they were so stuck in the moment of like the party rock stuff, and you know, trap was still kind of new, and then you had like the EDM and the trap and all that. But then like the younger kids that I've at least experienced seem to know a lot more music, like, and I'm talking like the 22, 23 year olds that are just finally at the age to drink and hang out. And, you know, we have these discussions from time to time. It's through movies and like through TikTok, yes, even like where songs become viral, you know, the whole YouTube, all of that, I guess it really started with YouTube and viral videos of old songs and that they tend to know music a little more naturally. Maybe it's because, and I've said this since I owned a record store, as our generation becomes parents and we have young kids and the music we grew up, we're going to push our music onto our children, which is going to reinvigorate music that we loved and cycle it back through. Like we have rules in my car when in the car, like my daughter wants to hear Hits 1 or whatever. And I'm like, nope, we're going to listen to this jazz. You got to hear one jazz song. You got to hear one song on the 80s station. You're going to hear one song.
Beautiful.
And then we can hear one of your songs. And it's like four of my songs and one of your songs, you know, because when we were kids in the car, we got zero songs
ever. So. It was the tape.
Yeah, exactly. The 8-track was in, or the tape was in, and you didn't get any say. And you had no iPad or anything to like, fine, I'm just going to play this game. It was like, you had to sit there and listen. Like, but like being in that car with my family made me appreciate Motown, made me appreciate even like weird stuff to me, you know, now, but you're like, wow, that like Glenn Campbell was a badass songwriter. You know, it wasn't necessarily what I wanted to jam to, but it gave you an appreciation for, like, you listen to Wichita Lyman and like you hear there's like a mass amount of an orchestra behind that record and the changes, and you're just like, and you become a DJ and you become a music lover and you realize your parents put you onto a lot of dope music on different levels, and like that's where we are, and now we're cycling that back to a younger generation. So what do you guys, you know, DJs do have a little bit of say, yeah, but do you think that we can see a younger crowd with maybe some of what's happened with this and the technology? Do we see young kids like getting into real music?
I think so. I always tell my wife, I'm like amazed how the hits from the 70s, 80s and 90s and early 2000s still resonate with the kids that I see, at least in my places, in my market, that are so young, 21 years old. And like that's the parents. It has to be the parents, because if you think about it, they grew up in the iPod generation, so they could, you know, they could have been listening to anything at that point. And then now we have, you know, everything's streaming, everything's YouTube. They grew up in that era. So, and it just blows me away that they, even the 21-year-olds that come into my bar, they still know the big songs from the 80s, the cheesy stuff, the songs that were huge that we hated playing, but they worked. But I think that the last 10 years, this is like, you know, I'm sure we could all riff on this for hours, but I think the last 10 years, it's changed so much. And there's so many options out there that are instantly at your fingertips for you to listen to at any given point in time, like, you know, for $8 a month. Like, I got into an argument with somebody one day because I was telling them how I asked them if they had Spotify or Apple Music. And then they were like, well, what do you have? And I was like, I just have both. And they're like, why? And I'm like, I used to spend like $100 a week.
I have no concept of that.
What is $16 a month, you know, or whatever it is. So I just, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think I think a big thing that has to be discussed is like how different it is in everybody's market. San Fran and Portland are way different than where I am. You know, we're definitely, our crowds are still a little bit behind. If anybody's listening from Pittsburgh, sorry, but you got that's true. But
several other Pittsburgh DJs.
Several other DJs from your city have said that.
Right. Yeah, of course. But it's that, you know, so streaming, it can be like a blessing and a curse, because at the same time, somebody wants to hear the same old thing. There's always that group of people that are like, you're playing something, they're like, what is this? And they already have their phone out and they're already ready to look it up, you know? So.
Yeah, now you feel good as a DJ if you play something, you see a bunch of Shazam apps like flying. Right.
You get mad at first because you're like, why is everybody taking a selfie? And then you're like, oh, they're actually Shazamming that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when they can't find it, and then they're coming up and
they run up to you,
picture of your Serato. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Well, what about when they're Shazamming like 50 Cent in the club, and you're like, oh man, washed by.
Play the birthday song? The birthday song.
Yeah, play the birthday song.
What birthday song?
That is a 20-year-old song now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That song can almost go to the club.
Yep. Oh my gosh. It's crazy.
Keeps going. People are going to be like, what's that song about? Kids are going to be like, in the club? Like, what is that? What's the club?
What is the club?
What is a club?
Yeah. Indoor clubs. Huh? What?
Oh yeah, there you go. What if I told you we used to go dance inside at night and there was no brunch? Well,
there's also like a bit of aspect of out of sight, out of mind with this thing, right? I mean, a couple of years of no clubs or no club culture per se. You know, the kids were like 16 or maybe, you know, at that age, they're not going to experience going to clubs until there might not even have any interest when it opens back up. I don't know. I mean, it might.
Wow.
It probably.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Of their, you know, aspect of, you know, growing up, right? Where when I was at that age, it was going to shows and nightclubs and sporting events. That was it, right?
Yeah.
Well, check this out, though. What if the future, and actually I think this is something that we had as a potential thing that we could discuss. I know Nugget's experience with turning his venue a little bit more into, well, not a little bit more, into a private event space. Just think about the idea that as private events are a event, it's a moment in time that's not going to be duplicated again. That's what makes it special, right? So what if the idea of going out and listening to music, you can't go to a festival, there is no Coachella. What if that is what makes the experience of being in a nightclub or just a big venue that used to be a nightclub, whatever, turn into that experience that people look forward to? Because there's no, oh, this DJ's in town, I'll go next week. You know what I mean?
Hanging out, you know. I don't think that the aspect of, like, you know, hanging out will be the same.
Yeah.
It'll have to be planned, as we said, you know. It has to be like a planned experience.
Right.
Right.
I think we should, you know, we're diving into, like, really what's the future now, you know. But as far as the future, I think that's going to be it for this episode. We're going to talk about that.
Right. Okay.
Future.
On the next episode.
In the future.
We'll discuss on the future.
See you next week.
Of the nightclub scene. But that's it for now. Before we sign out, folks, I wanted to plug the virtual workshops that the Beat Refinery DJ School is offering. The next workshop is DJ Throwdown, DMC, current DMC USA champion. DJ Throwdowns utilize samples to enhance recordings and DJ performance. Man, that's a mouthful. That's going to be happening on Thursday, October 8th at 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. East Coast time. So register at beatrefinery.com or on the link on the screen. Link should be popping up right now. DJ As1 and Stylist Chris are also hosting and teaching their own virtual workshops after that. So check the link on the screen once again for more details. Again, that's going to do it for us for part one of this episode. We'll be back next week, Monday, 9 p.m. East Coast time, with part two, along with the same group of guests here tonight. If you prefer to listen to the audio side of things, this episode will be uploaded this Thursday to Apple, Spotify, and guys, we're now available on Amazon Music.
Ooh. Yeah, make it move. Ooh.
Get that Bezos money. Get that Bezos money.
But yeah, you can check us out on those platforms and also wherever you consume and listen to All Things Podcast. So thank you once again to everybody for tuning in. So once again, stay safe.
Thanks, guys.
Keep wearing a mask. Spread some love. We'll see you guys next week. Everybody say peace.
Buzz! Booyaka! Booyaka, 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 booyaka.